Well, let's welcome back manager Mike Meyer. Mike, I know you have a few team updates for us, so let's begin there.
We do. You know, we're excited. We made a trade with Winnipeg to get Roy Morales. You know, I think it was a big pickup for us. You know, really to solidify that catching spot for us. You know, Mike Hart and Clint Coulter have been doing a great job behind the dish for us defensively this year, but I think it's kind of taken a toll on them offensively. Neither one of them are really used to the grind of, you know, of catching every day and, you know, what kind of toll it takes on your legs. So having Roy is going to be huge. That way we can give Clint and Mike some more time in the outfield, you know, where they can have their legs underneath them and be more productive at the plate. We've added right-handed pitcher Tyler Danish. Spent time in the big leagues in 16, 17, and 18 with the White Sox. He came out of the bullpen for us for an inning last night, looked good, but he'll be moving into the rotation to fill one of those injury spots. I think his first start is going to be Saturday in St. Paul. You know, so a couple big pieces there. We've had some injuries. Jabari's kind of still nursing that hamstring injury. He's getting better day to day. I think we're going to get him back here quickly. So I can't remember if there's been anything else that we've added since the last time we talked.
I wanted to ask you about Roy Morales for a moment. You were talking about, you know, allowing Coulter and Hart to, you know, kind of get their legs back underneath them there. But I would think kind of the nice addition about Morales is because of the year that John Nestor was having, he really wasn't getting much of a chance. So he's pretty fresh for you.
He is, you know, he was doing a lot more DHing, you know, than catching. And, you know, he's been swinging it well. And so it's nice to have a guy that's, you know, he's ready to go. He wants to play every day. He wants to catch every day. So we'll probably give him 4 or 5 games behind the plate a week. Maybe give him Sundays off so he can have Sunday, Monday off, or DH him. But yeah, it is. It's nice to have him. And, you know, Nestor's as good as it gets, you know, in Winnipeg right now. And, but Roy is, he's a frontline starting catcher in our league, and we're excited to have him. And it's going to be a big piece already. Our pitchers are excited. He's really good at getting that low strike, and, you know, he knows what he's doing back there. So we're excited to have him.
Before we jump into fan questions, I think the big news around the team, kind of watching from the outside, is it looks like Keaton Steele will not be your closer now. He just was really struggling a little bit right now.
No, he still is. He just, you know, he was going 5 out of 6 days a week. And so velo-wise, he went from being 94, 95 to 89, 90.
Okay.
And his curveball, which was, you know, unhittable early in the season, is just kind of rolling in there. And Keaton was, he's been great, you know, for us, and he'll take the ball anytime we ask him. And, you know, pitching in the birdcage can really deplete a pitching staff very quickly. And to have 3 starting pitchers go down in the same week, you know, our bullpen was absolutely destroyed. And, you know, we tried to get through it as best we could, and unfortunately, we had to keep running Keaton out there. So we just have been focusing on trying to get him as many days off in a row as we can, just to get him back to where he was at the beginning of the year when he was lights out for us. You know, but it's nice to have a guy like Ryan Fritzie, who we really have a lot of confidence in, to come in and do the job in times when Keaton's not available, and so we're not afraid to use him just to make sure that Keaton's getting extra time off. Because we need him. He's going to be a big piece for us. He's really consistent. He knows what he's doing out there. And when, you know, he gets back to being full strength, you know, he's as good as they are in our league and on our team. So we'll get him back into that closer role.
Now I want to ask you about one other thing, because last year you guys were totally rolling along early on in the season. Then there was that Saints series where they came in. There was a ton of runs that were scored in that game, and the team kind of was never really the same after that. Is there any concern when you're rolling this season, all of a sudden Chicago comes to town and you have a big high scoring series like that? Is there any concern about that kind of lingering effect this year as well?
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily, you know, the opponent we're playing against or how many runs we give up. It's more of a health thing for us. It's I'm telling you, you know, being in Sioux Falls as long as I have, with the way the American Association every single year is getting better and better and better, and the lineups are getting deeper and deeper, and the strike zones are getting smaller and smaller, every year it gets more difficult to get 27 outs in the birdcage. And what it's an accumulative effect, where we've been really good in the first part of seasons every year in my tenure, but what, you know, inevitably happens is our pitching staffs just get worn down, and I haven't done a good enough job of just continuing to bring new faces in to give us that boost of, you know, energy, and to have somebody else that can we can run out there to get us through games. And, you know, it's been kind of the same thing here lately. We've, to be honest with you, our record should be significantly better than it is if we were healthy in the pitching staff and we had enough guys to get through games. But, you know, we're running guys out there for the fourth and fifth nights in a row, and they're not at the same level. Like, Fullman was amazing for us at the beginning of the year, and he had like three or four outings in the middle where he wasn't very good, and it was because he went from being 93, 94 to being 87, 88. You know, same with Keaton. You know, same with DJ Shirabi. They've all been completely overused, and there really wasn't anything we could do about it. We just didn't have enough arms down there. And so that's why we're continuing to kind of try to keep adding people, and getting Sam Bragg back to be available out of the bullpen is going to be big for us. And Nico's, you know, really throwing the ball well lately, so that's going to be good. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Madison Younginer can bring something to the table out of the bullpen for us as well. But it's more of a wear and tear on our pitching staff. And, you know, there was a lot of games, you know, in this last two-week stretch that, you know, we win easily if we have our full bullpen, you know, but we give up big leads and, you know, we're holding on for dear life, or we lose some games that are close that we wouldn't normally lose if we were fresh.
Well, if nothing else, Younginer proving he's got quite a bat for you.
Yeah, he's a two-way guy. He's been a two-way guy. He was a two-way guy in the minor leagues. You know, he can swing, and he's a pretty decent outfielder. I'm a little frustrated with him because, you know, he was power shagging the other day in the outfield during batting practice and kind of tweaked his groin a little bit. So he's been down the last couple of days, but I think we're going to get him back either tonight or tomorrow. But yeah, so hopefully he can, you know, he can be one of those pieces in the bullpen as well. And, you know, and we can get this pitching staff fully healthy and kind of, you know, take some of the pressure off of the big four guys that we have down there.
Well, let's jump into fan questions this week, and we'll start with Dominic, who says, nice trade for Morales, Skipper. He is the real big pickup. How long do you think it takes for him to get accustomed to pitchers and for them to get accustomed to throwing to him?
It'll be a little bit. You know, he's been in between innings the last couple of nights. He's been a lot of conversations with the guy that he's working with, and it'll take him a minute, but, you know, you could see in the first night with Zocan, you know, they weren't quite on the same page the first couple of innings, but by the time they got, you know, middle of the game, you know, they were rolling together, you know, and you can tell by the pace of the game, there's not as much, you know, shaking of pitches and, you know, conversations on the mound. It's just really quick moving. You know, he's putting something down and Jake wants to throw that, and, you know, I think it's just a matter of a week or two when he really catches everybody, you know, once or the relievers a couple of times before he's really good with, you know, knowing what everybody wants to do out there.
Frank would like to know, what happened in that game that Lago got thrown out?
Well, there was, you know, a little bit of bad blood between our teams for the entire series. And, you know, to be honest, every team in the league has had some bad blood with the Chicago Dogs this year. It's they like to talk, and, you know, they run their mouths quite a bit and on social media and, you know, in person. And, you know, they're kind of instigators, and, you know, it's not my style of game, but it happens. And, you know, so there was some bad blood between the two teams. you know, going into that Sunday game. And, you know, it was pretty obvious that, you know, we hit the home run to tie the game, and, you know, he hadn't missed that bat at all, and puts one right in the middle of the Lago's back. And, you know, Lago was obviously pretty upset about it and stuff. So there were some words exchanged, and Lago went to steal second and went hard into second, and they didn't like that too much, and so there was more words exchanged, and so the umpires decided to try to, you know, nip it right there, and threw Lago out of the game.
Wow. Margaret would like to know, do you feel like Alea Lago is almost a lock for the batting crown, barring injuries, of course?
I think he's got a really good, you know, chance. I mean, you know, he's just so consistent. You know, I don't, there's, in the last, you know, couple of seasons, I can only really remember maybe one or two games where he wasn't really locked in. You know, other than that, you know, even when he has nights where he's 1-for-4, you know, he doesn't get a hit, he still is barreling baseballs and hitting them hard. And I think, I don't remember if he got any hits last night, but, you know, he hit a couple of balls really hard. One, he flew out to the wall in right, and the narrator made a diving play on him. Another one. Oh, and he hit a line drive that the second baseman made a diving play. So it's just kind of how he is, you know. He finds a way to get the barrel to the baseball, and when you do that consistently, the numbers are going to be there in the end. And, you know, so if he stays healthy, I wouldn't say he's a lock, but I think he's got a really legit chance of doing it again.
Yeah, we won't say anything about that number he's hovering around there, so we'll avoid that. Raymond would like to know, is it good to have the Saints out of our house?
You know, I think it is. I mean, we really like playing against them in our ballpark. You know, I think it's a good matchup when we're playing anybody in our ballpark. But like I was saying earlier, I think what it ends up doing is it gives us a little bit of a, you know, I don't want to say it's a, you know, rest for our pitching staff, but it's almost like a rest for our pitching staff. You know, pitching in the birdcage is so demanding physically and mentally, you know, that having those 12-day homestands is just absolutely brutal, you know, for our players and our pitchers. But, you know, for me as well, it's, you know, I was joking with Marty Bauer last night during the game, one of the umpires, and I said, man, it's easy managing here. You just let your starter go until he's, you know, at his pitch limit, and then you bring in the next guy, and, you know, you just keep, you know, having small innings or quick innings, and it's easy. In the birdcage, it's, before the game starts, I'm trying to do the math in my head and figuring out how we're going to survive this game and try to win at the same time and yet still have enough to get through the game the next day, and trying to figure out how to stagger my bullpen just so that I don't, you know, we're not killing these guys out there. And so it's nice to be on the road for a minute just to be able to play a normal baseball game.
Bill says, Mike, I don't know if you knew this, but George Samus is not a big fan of sharks. Maybe we can get him off his game by leaving little shark images all over the field.
I don't know. I think that's the opposite, isn't he? Doesn't George love sharks?
I know, but
Shark Week's his favorite week of the year.
I remember when him and I were doing shows, he does love watching Shark Week, but he was telling me one time too, he said he's always very critical of people who go swimming in the ocean. He never gets, he's like, look, somebody always gets attacked by a shark. I don't get this.
Yeah, that's true. I do think he is, he's pretty afraid of sharks, but he does love watching shows about sharks. Yeah, that's funny.
Jacob would like to know, what kinds of things tip off a batter about the pitch that a pitcher is going to throw?
Well, you know, obviously, we're trying to gain as any advantage we can. So pre-pitch, you know, you're looking to see if they flick their index finger in their glove when they're changing their grip, if they fan their glove when they're changing their grip. Some guys will set higher when they're throwing a breaking ball than they do when they have a fastball, so that means that their hands come together and they hold them maybe at their chin. when they're throwing a breaking ball, and they hold them down more towards their chest when they're throwing a fastball. So there's all those things that we're looking for pre-pitch. And then when they start their delivery, you know, pitchers that don't keep the same arm speed, you know, meaning they slowed their arm speed down a little bit when they're throwing a changeup or they're throwing a breaking ball, that's an immediate red flag that, you know, sends a signal to the hitter, like they need to stay back. You're also looking for their release point. So sometimes when guys are struggling a little bit, it's because their curveball or breaking ball will kind of pop out of their fingers, and you can see it with your eyes. It kind of goes up first, and immediately hitters will recognize that, and they slow their mechanics down because it's either going to be a high fastball that's way out of the zone, or it's going to be a slow curveball. And so immediately they kind of stop their mechanics and they sit back and wait for that slow curveball. And so little things like that you're looking for, just to see if, you know, if you can gain a little bit of advantage.
I wonder how many at-bats or years of experience do you have that you can instantaneously in your head determine that some guy has slowed his arm speed down a fraction of a second? And how long does that take?
It's 10,000 hours, you know, just like anything else. You know, you just doing things over and over and over again, you're immediately going to get better. But it's weird when you're watching it as a casual fan, you may not notice it. But for us, it's blatantly obvious. And so the pitching coaches will immediately say, hey, you're slowing down your arm speed on your changeup. But it doesn't mean that he's able to correct it. You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or, hey, your curveball's popping. You need to make sure you're, you know, throwing it out instead of throwing it up and try to throw it a little bit harder. And, you know, like Brad, for example. Brad came in the game yesterday. He threw, I think, 5 curveballs and had 4 swing and misses and a double play ball out of it, where before his elbow injury, he was not getting anybody out with it because it was immediately popping up. And it was too slow. He wasn't throwing it hard enough because his elbow was bothering him. And it's immediate red flag where you can kind of see the guys kind of double clutch at the plate. And they can stay back and keep their hands back and you know, drive that baseball. And so it's obvious when you've been watching baseball as much as any of us have been or on the field live. You can just see how it's a little bit different. And a little bit of difference makes a huge difference in baseball.
Wow. Brandon says, do you think that baseball would be more fun if the outfield fences were moved back more so that there was more room in the outfield? This would seem to add more doubles and triples, which I think would make baseball more fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's already, you know, certain ballparks around the country where that's a thing, you know, where there's triples all over the place, and yeah, you know, I love it. I think it's exciting, and you know, to be honest, there's days when it's fun being in the birdcage because the ball's just launching out of the stadium, but there's also days when it's like, all right, every fly ball is a home run, and you know, this isn't baseball. You know, and I'd much rather have a ballpark that plays a little bit more like Gary at times, where, you know, if you can hit one in the gap, it's an all-day triple. So yeah, I honestly think that's one of the cool things about baseball, where if you go in the NBA, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty certain every single arena, every single court, the free throw line's exactly the same distance, and the 3-point line's exactly the same distance, and the court length's exactly the same distance. Where for us, it's not like that. Every ballpark is different. Every ballpark plays different. You know, it isn't the same, you know, when you go on the road or you're playing in different ballparks. And so there are certain places where it's, you know, bigger ballparks. There's not really any home runs, but there's a lot of doubles and triples.
Next up is Wendell, who would like to know, what is a stat that you value a lot?
Wins.
Probably besides that, I'm sure.
Well, offensively, you know, on-base percentage is a big one for me. You know, that's, you know, it's huge for us. You know, you have to get on base to score runs. And it doesn't really matter how you do it. You know, you can look at guys that are hitting 330, but if you look at their on base percentage and they're 350, that guy's not as valuable as a guy that's hitting 275 but has a 390 on base percentage. So on base percentage is very, very important to me. And then obviously slugging is important because, you know, you have to have a couple of those guys that can really slug it. And that's why I think not having Jabari in our lineup right now is really hurting us, because he's a double and home run machine. And he's a good, you know, he gets on base too. So he's kind of double whammy for us. You know, but those guys, you have to have those sluggers mixed in there, you know, to get you that big swing. Like, you know, we lost the game yesterday because Adam Brett Walker hit a three-run home run, and that was the difference. So you need to have those slugging guys in there, but on-base percentage is more important for me. And then pitching-wise, yeah, ERA, you know, that's a number that, you know, has been thrown out there for, you know, 100 years. But for me, it's WHIP, walks and hits to innings pitched. And that tells you how much traffic you're going to have on the bases. So, for example, you can be a guy that has, you know, a 1.7 WHIP, which is pretty high, and your ERA is low. It just means that you're pitching every time you throw the rubber every inning. There's a lot of traffic out there, and eventually you're not going to be able to get the line drive double play. You're not going to get the double play to get out of the inning. Eventually the ERA is going to go up, or vice versa. If you're a 1.2 WHIP, 1.2 runners, you know, on base per inning, if you're a 1.2 WHIP and you've got a 5 ERA, eventually that ERA is going to come down because they're not going to continually score if they're only getting one guy on, you know, every inning. You know, so those are kind of the numbers that I look for.
Preston says, those Phoenix Suns are playing pretty well, Mike. Do they squeak their way into the NBA playoffs?
I don't think they do, but I really like the way they're playing right now. I think they've got some, you know, some really talented younger guys, and hopefully, you know, they can, you know, keep this thing rolling into next year. Obviously, DeAndre Ayton is my guy. He's a University of Arizona kid, and, you know, it's fun to watch, and, you know, I know some of our guys have been, you know, having the NBA, you know, bubble on their phones or on the TV all day, every day, so it's been nice to have live sports back on a little bit and, you know, following it. I just think that they started off too far behind, and there's not, you know, not a lot of games, you know, left in their regular season.
Now we get to the Ask Mike About Himself part of the show. Elaine starts with, do you feel like you missed out on any life experiences because you have been with the same woman pretty much your whole life?
No, not at all. I actually feel like I've gained, a bunch. You know, when you find the right person and you're together, and, you know, for as long as we've been together and you still like to be around each other, you know, that's a pretty special thing. And, you know, we have a lot of similar interests and things that we like to do together, and there's some things that we, you know, that she likes that I don't, or I like and she doesn't, and we always make sure that, you know, we have time to do those things. And you know, it's been a great ride, and, you know, hopefully, you know, we've got another 40 more years.
It's always more fun to do something with somebody you like doing it with.
So. Exactly.
The way it is. We return back with a guy who says, back to the honey-do list. What chores do you absolutely hate to do?
Thank goodness my wife does this most of the time. I usually, because I'm home in the wintertime, you know, I'll handle, you know, dishes and laundry and cooking and, you know, cleaning and stuff like that. And she usually handles the bathrooms. But occasionally, when she's been crazy busy with work or whatever's going on, you know, then I'll take it on. And I'm not a huge fan of cleaning the bathroom, but it has to happen. And, you know, we do our very best to clean them once a week, just because it's kind of, you know, you want to make sure you're staying, you know, clean and healthy. So it's not my favorite task, but it's part of the deal.
Pam says, my husband is a total jackass when he is sick, needy, obnoxious, dramatic. Please tell me you men aren't all like that.
You know, I can't vouch for all men in the world, but I can tell you this. When my wife is sick compared to when I'm sick, it's completely different. I'm usually a wuss, and I complain quite a bit and moan quite a bit and mope around and I'm a little bit more needy than she is. So I can't, you know, unfortunately I can't say anything bad about your husband.
Gabe would like you to tell us about the irrational fears and phobias of Mike Meyer.
You know, I don't, that's a tough question because I don't really have, you know, any fears that I don't think anybody else, you know, has. You know, really, the only thing that ever concerns me is not being able to provide for my family or be a good father or husband, you know, and be there for the people that need me the most. So I'd say, you know, failure to live up to those things is really the only thing that keeps me up at night. And, you know, a part of that is this job, you know, because I love doing this job and it makes me happy. And when I'm happy, it's easier for me to make others happy. And, you know, this is how I provide for my family. So there's times when, you know, this job can stress me out pretty good and, you know, and I can get a little bit of anxiety with it. And I think that's how most of our managers in this league, you know, are. We always talk about how, you know, it's really difficult to sleep during the season. You either crash out immediately when the game's over and wake up at 3 a.m. and can't go back to sleep, or you don't go to sleep until 5 a.m. and wake up, you know, at 9, because, you know, it's hard to just settle and get some rest.
I think people forget to understand too that coaching or managing is the only job you're hired to, knowing you're going to be fired. That's just the outcome.
It is. It's inevitable, and you just hope you have a good enough run for a long enough time that, you know, and you've done some things that you get hired somewhere else.
And we end with Aaron this week, who would like to know, have you ever done something, and when it was discovered, you at least insinuated that your kids were responsible?
No, I haven't, but that's, I'll add that to the playbook. No. Well, to be honest, I'm not sure I've ever made a mistake or done something that I wasn't supposed to, Rob. So
I agree with that.
If that day ever comes, then for sure I'll blame it on the kids.
That's awesome, Mike. Thanks for joining us this week.
All right, Rob. You guys have a good week.